The following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios, Incorporated.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland.
Greetings, salutations, welcome to another edition from Radioland. Something a little different this time around, too. I'm not doing this show, actually, for this time out. Here's the thing. There's a show that we run on Radio Memphis, and of course, we like to take some of the things that we've dealt with on the radio station and put them here because a lot of folks haven't made the leap, if you will, from this podcast, from Radioland over to Radio Memphis. So we have some overlap and all, but I want to be able to share some of the things that have happened over there to a pretty groovy degree, and this is certainly no exception to the rule as well. Dirty D, you've heard her, Diana Fryer. We've done a couple of episodes with her. She's actually going to take over on this episode because she was doing her show Around the World, Radio Memphis Around the World. It happens on Saturdays from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time here in Memphis. And she had got into a fantastic conversation by phone with Mr. Michael Wagner. Michael Wagner. He's from Hamburg, Germany. But here's the thing. You may not know him, but you know about him. For example, he had gotten into a friendship with a cat by the name of Don Dokken and wound up moving to Los Angeles. And in 1981, he produced the first Dokken album. All right. Now, okay, maybe this will start ringing some bells for you hair metal kids. He would go on to produce such big albums as Skid Row's self-titled debut, which sold 5 million copies here in the U.S. alone. He's also involved. He mixed Metallica's 1986 classic Master of Puppets. He also engineered the single version of Janet Jackson's Black Cat, which is his only pop music collaboration. He's got his fingers in such albums by Motley Crue, Wasp, Overkill, Accept. He was the original guitarist for Accept, by the way. Great White, Stryper, Poison, Keel, Alice Cooper, Extreme, Megadeth, Janet Jackson, of course, Ozzy Osbourne, Dokken, Metallica, White Line, and Skid Row, among many others. Yeah, you're going to hear a really cool interview. So you want to be a rock star? Pay close attention because I tell you what, this is how we got to know him. And you're going to hear the story. He's involved with an artist that we play on Radio Memphis, a young lady by the name of Hannah Fairlight. And she went to Nashville to record a tune over there, which you're going to hear right now as we get into this special episode from Radioland.
Radio Memphis.
Take me out, show me off to all your fancy friends. I'll make them laugh. Let's see how long I can pretend. Put me on a pedestal high above them all. Plenty to replace you, girl, if it should fall. You took me in.
That was the lovely Miss Hannah Fairlight, straight out of Nashville, Tennessee, right here at radio-memphis.com. You're listening to Radio Memphis Around the World with me, Dirty D. And the very cool thing about that latest track from her that we've got here is that she was able to work with the wonderful Mr. Michael Wagner out of Wild World Studios. In fact, I happen to have Mr. Wagner on the phone with me right now. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am fantastic. Oh, my God. Thank you so much for taking out and hanging out with me. It's that right there that I just played, that's probably one of my ultimate favorite songs that she does. I play it all the time. And you know, Hannah, she's such a fantastic girl, and I know that she's completely talented and she plays all these different instruments. And you know, when we got to talk, she had told me that she'd gotten away from playing piano, and that when she started working with you, you actually brought that out in her.
Yeah, it was worth bringing out, I think. Have you heard her other songs?
You know, I have not. And so, yeah, you know, and everybody that's listening, you know, you guys saw me make some posts on the Radio Memphis Around the World page and some of the Radio Memphis. You guys have just put some more in the can and for release. And so I'm expecting to hear them soon.
Yes, you will. And you're in for a surprise.
That is fantastic.
That is
absolutely fantastic. You know, I got hooked up with you through her, you know, and you know, we started playing some of her music, you know, before she had actually was invited to be part of one of your sound seminars. And you know, she was telling me, you know, about what she had going on and the fact that she was going to be working with you. And everybody who's tuned in, look, you're an amazing man. You've been doing this for the better part of 3 decades. You know, you've busted out with, you know, with artists like, you know, the Dokken, the Alice Coopers. You've done stuff with Janet Jackson. You've done stuff with Skid Row, you know, and all of their, you know, all of their, you know, coming out albums and first albums. What you see and what you do is amazing, you know.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's one of those... You still work with independent artists. And that was one of the main reasons why I wanted to talk to you. Because there's a lot of people out there that are trying to make their break, and you know, they want that advice, or they wanna know what you're looking for, and they wanna know what you hear and what you see.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, I love working first albums or new artists, because as it is, they had like 10 years to write those songs that they're gonna be recording.
Right.
Once they're on the road and they're in the back of the bus, they have like 3 months to write the next album. You know, so the first album to me is always a very important one, and you know, it also, there's still a little bit of space to shape the band the way they're wanted to be shaped, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's important. And, you know, for everybody, and look, you've had all these articles that have been written about you. You're, you know, smeared all over, you know, music industry. I mean, you're the go-to guy when it comes to the rock and pop. You know, a lot of people do know that you're one of the original founding members of Accept, which I think
right.
is fantastic. Fantastic, because I do a metal show on Monday night, so you know I have to pay homage. But you know, the funny thing is that all of these cool things that you get to be a part of, your particular journey is the same as somebody that was in a band, in that It wasn't like you just leaped into this place and you're recording all of these amazing people and you're doing, you know, you're world renowned, you know.
Well, people say it was an overnight success. Well, I tell you what, it was a long freaking night.
See, that's what I wanted to hear. That's what.
Yeah.
I read the story where you slept on the sofa when you came to the States.
Oh yeah, yeah. Don Dokken invited me over, and you know, I slept on his sofa for the first month that I was here. Which was very enlightening into the rock music and rock bands, but that's how it all started from me being over here.
For you being over here, it started from the view from Don Dokken's sofa.
That's right, and all the stuff that was going on in that house.
We'll see.
Which is probably something we shouldn't be talking about on radio.
Oh, nice. What? Nobody's listening?
Oh, I know.
I'm just kidding. But that's just it. I mean, you know, you got your start. You know, obviously you're from Germany. And
right.
And you yourself, you know, a guitar player, and, you know, you started the beginnings.
Yeah, ex-guitar player. I think I haven't played ever since, you know, the accepting was ending for me, and that's about 1970.
Oh, wow. You wound up going into the army, the German army.
And right.
And so
I was drafted, yeah.
And so you had to go do that thing. And so when you came back, Was doing the recording thing, was that something that you had planned on doing, or was that something you fell into?
I always loved music, and I always loved electronics. So, you know, I always tried to put both of it together.
Okay.
And once I left the army, I actually was staying in Hamburg, Germany. I found a job in a company called Stramp, mm-hmm. where we were building guitar amplifiers and you know. And then the first day I walked in, there was Richie Blackmore.
Oh, wow.
in there. And I go, I think I'm going to do this. Yeah, this is a good job.
I think I'll stay.
Yeah, right.
I'll make this work.
Yeah. So, and, you know, we dealt with clients like Leslie West and Rory Gallagher and all great, great, great people. And during those years at that company, I got my degree in electronics. And we were building, ended up building studio gear.
Oh, nice.
So we had a little demo studio set up, and I was doing some recording in there. I go, wait a minute. Working with this stuff is a lot more fun than building this stuff.
See?
So, you know, that's how I came, and I opened up my first studio in Hamburg, Germany.
Oh, wow. And what was the name of that studio?
That's where I met Don, and the rest is pretty much history, you know?
Perfect. What was the name of that studio?
You won't believe it. It was called Tennessee Studios.
And that's what I thought it was. And how does that work out that you're in Germany and you're naming stuff after Tennessee?
Well, I didn't name it. The thing was that the people that basically had the money behind it also had a band that was called Tennessee.
Oh, nice.
And it was a German country band, pretty awful, I have to say. And but they, you know, they just named the studio Tennessee Studios because it was basically their place, and I was just employed, you know.
Ah,
so
okay.
That's how it came about, and now look where I am now.
Look at where you're at now. So, you know, and it was so funny because, you know, and of course I know about you as far as through your works and stuff, and some of my most favorite albums that I get to listen to, you know, your paw prints are all over them. But, you know, when I got to really read about you and find out about kind of some of the things you went through, you stayed in the States, you know, for the better part of that month on Don Dokken's sofa.
Right.
and you wound up getting a call so that you can do some live, you could do the live sound, and you wound up going back.
I was over here and after that was an initial visit. The first month was an initial visit, so I had to go back. And but I right there I made the decision to come back and stay. So
nice.
I came back in 1980 and tried to stay, but you know the economy wasn't that good around that time.
And it wasn't.
I got a job at Larrabee Studios, one of the biggest studios in LA at the time. And, you know, but the economy wasn't that good, so there was not really a lot of money to make. And then Udo, who I grew up with, came and visited and goes, hey, man, Accept is going on tour, and you want to do the live sound? And that was it. I went back with him, and we rehearsed. We did the live sound, opened up for Judas Priest.
Wow.
And from there, I would come to America off and on. Go back, come here. I did Great White. I did Malice.
Wow.
Actually did the first Motley Crue during that time.
Insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
And you know, so all that stuff came together. And in 1984, Tom Zutaut from Elektra, A&R from Elektra, invited me over to do a single with the band X.
Nice.
And X from L.A., and it was an underground punk band, and we did it, and ever since, I'm here, basically,
you know.
I was in the right place at the right time, got lucky, and got one gig after another, and I'm still working at it.
And see, that's what's so funny is that, you know, everybody looks at your at the discography and your repertoire as far as, you know, who you've worked with. All these people that we throw these names out, you were on the front end of them. You know, this is before they were known. This is before they
right.
were really making their mark. And so you yourself are putting your place, you know, putting yourself in the right places at the right time. You're getting hands-on experience, you know, with some of the engineers during this time period. And mind you,
well, actually, I was always the engineer and early on also the producer. You know, I did not really work as somebody that works as an assistant or with another engineer. It was like, hey, here's the cold water. Just jump into it.
And they threw you in.
Yeah.
See, but that was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to you.
Yes, it was. And I was pretty cocky at the time. You know?
Oh, see, okay, now, all right, at least you said it. At least you said it. And at least you admit it, you know, but you had the right amount. You know what I mean?
Right.
You had the right amount to take care of your business. So you start, you know, you start getting, you know, getting booked. Everybody starts working with you. And somehow you wind up in Nashville.
Yeah, well, that was 12 years later.
Okay.
You know, I was in L.A. for 12 years and did a whole bunch of records out there. I had a great time, a great career. And then, you know, L.A. got fuller and fuller and fuller of people. There was more and more natural disasters, riots. And it was just like, man, this is getting out of hand.
Nothing's changed.
I came here to Nashville and did another Accept record, which was actually the last Accept record that Udo was in.
Okay.
And, you know, Wolf, the guitar player, already lived here. And so we did it here. And I go, why again am I in L.A., you know? And I fell in love with Nashville. And I go, I'm going to move here. And the next year, I did actually move here.
Now, I did read this one article. And I want to say that it was in the Tennessean or something like that. And this is, you know, somebody had sat down with you and they were talking about your move and bringing Wire World, you know, Studios, you know, into Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in the game, you know, you're pretty much, you're kind of known in industry, you know, and everybody mm-hmm. knows the people and the artists that you've worked with because their you know, premieres wind up coming out and charting very heavily.
Mm-hmm.
So you come into Nashville. And mind you, you know, predominantly known as a country city for that part.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And here comes rock and roll metal boy.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, and I want to say when I was reading about it, you know, you had all the good old boys come around, and then
I had like conversations with what we call the good old boys. You know, they were like firmly sitting in a seat here in Nashville doing all their country music. And. And I was hinted at that, you know, you're not going to do any country, right? I go, no, I'm just going to, you know, bring bands here. I'm going to bring money into the town.
Yeah.
People are going to stay, rent cars, rent hotels, eat, you know, and I'm going to keep doing what I was, that stuff that I'm good at. I'm not good at country. What that all was based on was that Mutt Lange had just done Shania Twain.
Ah.
And he completely jumped out of the typical way of doing a country record, and everybody goes, never going to work. Well, sorry, 9 million records talk a different story there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was the general idea. No, God, not another one. You know?
Well, you know, it was funny because the way the article read, too, they were like, all right, so, you know, because you're very successful, you know, and everybody that you, every artist, you know, that you've been able to work with, produce, you know, mix and record, you know, has had some type of magic happen for them. And,
right.
you know, which says tremendous, you know, abilities about you and your talent. And they're looking around going, all right, so if he shows up, all right, we're you know, you're going to do your thing so we can still do ours, right? And that's the way the article kind of came off. And you know, and I was reading it going, here comes rock and roll boy with the hairdo and everything else, and he's like, I got this, you know,
right?
so you set up in Nashville. Yeah. and you know, some of the cool things, other than the fact that you actually working with these artists and working with their music and producing and recording, you start finding that everybody starts hunting you down because they want to know how you make your sound, how you make your recordings.
Well, I'm hoping I'm not making my sound. I'm hoping I make the band sound, you know. I'm not trying to push anything on them. I just try to get the best part of the band and bring it out.
That's awesome. What a wonderful say to say. And that goes also to say, too, I mean, how hard is it to work with musicians?
Well, it differs. Obviously, if you know, as a musician, if you stand in front of 20,000 people and you have to perform, you have to have a little bit of an ego. You have to have some self-security. And that is a good thing to have. And you also have to be a little bit crazy. And that craziness is what makes that particular band or that particular musician. But it's also sometimes something that, you know, you have to deal with. And you learn that over the years. You know, if you're producing, it's like 75% psychology.
Absolutely.
And once you got a little bit of a handle on that, you get along and you just turn into the fourth or fifth band member.
Ah.
You know?
I got you.
And you get that trust, and at that point, you can really work on something together.
That's amazing stuff. And you know, with you, you know, you and I, we got to catch up with each other this past week and kind of chit chat. And I was trying to climb in your brain and get to know you, and which is, you know, you've got so much stuff, man. I need about four or five other sessions with you. I do. You know, and we were talking about this very thing, and you know, how hard is it to have a band show up and they have this preconceived notion on what they may think or may not think, and you actually kind of you put it in perspective for me on how you look at something, you know. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't necessarily that you were trying to change the creativity or you were trying to change, you know, the idea or the process that they had. But
it's basically bringing out the best and bringing out the stuff that they sometimes don't know that they have, you know, pushing them a little bit into the direction that they actually wanted to go in anyway, but, you know, pushing them a little bit further. And, you know, it's never like, okay, there's a band walking in and we start working. No, there is a long preparation period. There is like me listening to their music, meeting with the band, see if I do get along with the people.
Sure.
And also, if we decide to do something together, then we go into pre-production and we do a demo kind of situation where you kind of can hear where it's going. And as long as everybody is happy with it, then we're on, you know, then we're doing it for real.
See.
So it's not like, okay, door opens, or let's start working. Oh, that didn't work. It's actually, there's a lot of preparation involved.
And see, that's what, you know, and again, you know, because, you know, I told you kind of what we do here at Radio Memphis, and we play the unsigned and indie artists, and we have such amazing sound and amazing talent, just because Memphis in the Mid-South has an amazing sound anyway. Mm-hmm. as far as music, as far as these artists, and they're so talented. But, you know, they'll come in. And, you know, they expect, especially the generations now, it's a now society. I want it now. Give it to me now. Me now. You know, do this now. And, you know, you just described a process. That's what it is. It's a process. You know, it takes time. And
it not only takes time, it also takes practicing, you know.
Oh.
What I don't like about the current generation, or some of the current generation of musicians, is that they... As you say, they come in and expect to be, you know, instant gratification. No, you got to practice first. You got to be the one that records it. You got to be the one that makes it good. I'm just helping with that.
See,
and it's a lot of work, and I'm missing that a little bit sometimes with the new band, you know. And I'm trying to work with people that are still in that way, the old way. You know, I call it the old way, that still practice, that still care about their sound,
yes.
Care about their band. You know, when you look at Motley Crue, you think they cared about what they look like?
No, somebody came in and told them what to do. Right? I mean, I'm asking you.
They, you know, they had their thing going, and they put that through, and that was them. And you would see them, and that was it, you know. And they wouldn't stand there with like jeans and pleated shirts on stage, and all looked the same, as the whole audience does. No, they stood out. They worked on their image. They worked on their music very, very detailed. And sometimes I'm missing that a little bit nowadays.
You know what? And I'm glad you said that, too, because there's that whole full package thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's and don't get me wrong. I know that stage performance and putting on a good show, you know, and how you act off stage and, you know, in your private lives. I mean, I understand that it could be two separate things, but when you are your own billboard and your own marketing tool, you know, mm-hmm. you almost have to live that life. In other words, you have to be that.
And you just said that. It's a lifestyle. It's not I'm making music. It's not a hobby. It's a lifestyle. You're living the lifestyle, and that's what's pretty much different now. You know, everybody wants to be like a little bit more comfortable and go into the studio, make music on the side, or we're doing a record. And, you know, at that time, back then, it was like, hey, we're living this. This is it. That's us. And you know, if we don't have any money because we're not making any money with our music, then we don't have any money and we don't have any food. Then we're going to starve for a while. And that's how it went, you know.
And everybody was all in, all hands on deck. This is what they did. This is what you show up for. And,
right. And you could count on that if somebody was all in, they were all in. And they would give their best and anything to make this happen.
See? And that's the thing right there. You know, we were talking, you know, the other night when you and I were on the phone, and one of the things you said to me, we say it all the time, and not in the same words, you know, and it stuck with me when it rang with you, because you were like, if somebody were to tell you that you were going to go on tour tomorrow for mm-hmm. a year, mm-hmm. and you start saying, oh, well, I got this, oh, well, I got my family, oh, well, that, then you, right off the bat, you're like, you ain't it.
Right. That's right. You're not in it for the music, you know, because if somebody tells you you're going on tour for a year, that would be the best thing that could ever happen to you, you know.
That's the way it's supposed to be.
In your music. But if you then go, well, you know, I got to babysit, I got to do this, got to mow the lawn. No, you're going on tour, and that is your opportunity. And if you don't take that, you're not really serious, I think.
And that's the way it should be. Now, you've got your and it's so funny because a lot of these people that we talk about, they're your friends, you know, or they know you and they've worked with you, you know, early, you know, in your earlier career, and you've mm-hmm. managed to keep relationships with them, and even though they've, you know, sold, you know, went gold and platinum and all this other stuff, you still continually work with certain artists, and
right.
you've also kept the door open with working with, you know, some of these independent artists. Now, I know that you, like I said, you listen to music all day and you're like, okay, you know, sometimes you have to stop down and you have to take a break and step away. But if somebody were to play something in front of you, and somebody gives you some music and stuff, I mean, what are you listening for? What do you listen for if you sit there and go, they got it? What do you hear?
Well, number one, I much rather probably want to see them perform than listening to their music. I want to see what they do,
Bam.
How they handle themselves,
Bingo.
What they do with their music. Are they standing behind it? That to me is the most important thing. Also, obviously, there has to be some quality in terms of the songwriting. I don't care about the sound. I can deal with that. But the quality of the songwriting and performance has to be good. Like Hannah, you know?
Yes.
It's just I hear Hannah and I go, this is freaking awesome. I want to deal with that. I want to work with that. And she delivers every time.
You were so awesome when we were talking about Hannah, and I know she's probably listening. So hey to Hannah. She, like I said, I adore her too. She's an amazing talent.
Absolutely, yeah.
You were talking to me about it, and it was the funny thing we always tell people, and this is always told to me too, even because what you know what I do here and what we do here is that you never know who's listening, you never know who's paying attention, you never know who's going to walk in on a live show.
Right.
And, you know, it just so happened that you wandered in at one of your favorite places that you actually, you know, in the middle of your crazy, I don't take time off because I don't know what a vacation is, work week. you take time and you walk in and you happen to walk in on her.
Right.
And
it was actually Jeremy Asbrook who was the guitar player in Hannah's band, and I think about 15 other bands.
Oh, nice.
Jeremy is a great guy, and I knew him from before. We had worked together before on one of those workshops with another artist. And, you know, and he goes, hey, we're doing this on Tuesday nights. You want to come down? So I went down and looked at it, and there's Hannah getting on stage and singing the Zeppelin song.
Yeah,
and
I love
blew
her.
Blew my head off.
Yeah.
You know, and I go, this was pretty awesome. And then Jeremy goes, well, you should hear her play saxophone and keyboards and guitar. And I go, what?
Right.
So I ended up talking to Hannah, and we stuck our heads together. And, you know, I had a workshop coming up, and I go, hey, I need a live band for the workshop. And would you be interested?
How perfect.
And she goes, sure. And that's how we finally got together, and you know, I got to record with her. And actually, I loved it. I completely loved it. And what you just heard is what came out of that.
That was, you know, and what was so funny, because I remember that time period. And because we had just got her in, and you know, we were just doing stuff with her music and stuff, and she's actually one of my former artists of the month here for Radio Memphis Around the World. And so I was doing some highlighting and stuff, and so we got to kind of know each other, you know, during that time period. And you know, she was freaking out. She was like, oh my God, oh my God, who am I working with? And I'm like, all right, calm down. It's all good. Let's listen to this, you know, and you know, and that's me watching, you know, watching her, you know, as far as making the posts and stuff, and watching her work with you, and listening, you know, and listening in on some of the things, and watching her through social media and stuff, and that's the other thing too, people don't realize that somebody like me, I'll stalk. You know what I mean? This is what I do, you know? And you know, maybe it's the same thing that you do too, Michael. I'm not sure. In that, you know, you try to find out a little bit about somebody. You try to find out how, you know, how they act and how they are. And, you know, so you kind of pay attention. And
there has to be a certain kind of chemistry.
Yes.
You know?
And yes.
That chemistry was just there because she's a great person, and she is an amazing musician. And that came across right away. You know, never mind singing that Zeppelin song, but that came across right away. And then I go, can you send me some stuff that I can hear what you're doing? And she did. And I go, okay, we're done. We're working.
We're working. See, right. How amazing is that? But you got to, so I guess, I mean, you got to see her, you know, in a live element, and, you know, and see how she was and how she was interacting and you know, and that thing. And, you know, I say, you know, I tell these artists and I tell our bands, you know, stuff that we promote all the time. It's like, look, if you're not going to get up there, if you're not going to do your thing, you know, why am I going to come see you? Why am I going to pay the cover charge? Why am I going to, you know, go to a live show?
Right.
You know, at the same time, you know, it's these live shows that's important now in this time that actually sells this music and sells this, you know, these CDs and, you know, these records and T-shirts and, you know, all of this. And, you know, when you and I were talking, you said a very poignant thing to me in that, because I asked you, I said, so you're going to work with these guys. You're going to work with these artists, and you get to the point where we made this relationship. We've been in the studio. We have the finished product in our hand. And I asked you. I was like, so what would you tell them to do? And you were funny because you were like, man, I gave you the coolest sounding, you know, CD ever, and you know, this is kind of, you know, I might make suggestions, but this is kind of where you pick up. This is where you do your thing.
And obviously, you know, being in the business and for 40 years. There's a little bit of experience, but also if you look at the business the way it is nowadays, it's completely different from what it was like in the 80s or something like that. All that doesn't apply anymore. So my advice is now completely different from what it would have been back in the 80s.
Absolutely.
You know? And on the other hand, we have opportunities like social media where we can get to people. And that's the hardest part of everything is get your music. If you have a great record and nobody knows it's there, then nobody will listen to it and nobody will buy it. So
you're right.
The problem is getting it to the audience, getting it to the people that might like it. And, you know, and that was the gig of the record label before. And that is now all on the back of the artist.
See, and that's, I mean, and as far as developing relationships, I mean, and I agree with you on things not being the way they were, you know, in the 80s and stuff. And what's so funny is the, you know, the fantasy thing that pops up into some of these artists' minds are things that came from the 80s. I mean, it was somebody found you, you were an overnight success, and the next thing you know, the label showed up at the next day and you got a tour bus on your front lawn.
Right.
And no. Does, and of course, I don't even think it worked like that then.
It sometimes did.
Did it really?
If, you know, somebody with a lot of money behind them decided this is really, really good. And not all of those decisions were right, but a lot of them were, you know. And like I said, and the musicians would really fight for it and really go for it and live that kind of life, then it could happen that way. Maybe not the next day that you had a tour bus, but
a week.
Be, you know, yeah, let's work together.
Okay. All right. So
actually, one funny story is: do you remember the band Saigon Kick?
Oh my God! Yes, love of a fond. Yeah, love's on the way. Love it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And when we did the first record, actually, Atlantic called me up and said, "Hey, we want you to see this band and listen to this band." I go, well, send me a tape. It was a tape at the time. and they go, "No tape. We're flying you out. You have to play, see them play live." Okay.
All right.
And that's what I did. And you know, they played the Button South, and they kicked so much ass that night. And I really loved the band. By 3 o'clock in the morning, we were sitting in a little French fry place, and I had the studio booked. That was on a Friday.
Oh, nice.
I had the studio booked. I had the drums booked. I had everything booked for Monday. So
nice.
That's how it went. We met on a Friday. Actually, we met on a Thursday. I saw him play on a Friday. By Monday, we started the record.
Nice. See, all right. So you just proved to me that that's why people have these dreams.
Yeah.
But you know, even now, I mean, you've watched industry go from one platform to another platform to another platform. You watch,
right.
You know, things change, but there's still something that never changes for you. There has
right.
to be. You know, there's always got to be that one formula that, you know, something still works.
Right. That the band is serious and that they stand behind it. And obviously, they have to have a certain quality in their, like, in their music and songwriting and also personality, you know. If they're all messed up people, it's going to be really hard for them to sell their music to other people because, you know, people pick up on that. There's a vibe. And if the vibe is good, then already the first light is green. If the music is good, the second light is green, and so on and so on. And then when the record's done, there's about 50 more lights that have to turn green from then on. And those are the hardest ones.
You
can always make a great record, you know?
That part, and like you've said, you know, when we were talking, you're like, yeah, that part's easy. We can make a fantastic sounding record.
Yeah.
Not a problem. You know, what you do with it after that, you know, I guess what you're saying here is all these lights that you kind of have to go through. Do you ever, I mean, and I know it's happened, you've been in the business way too long. You've worked with artists and you've gotten real, real excited and you get really like, okay, this is going to be good. And they take a wrong turn.
It's not as much the artist taking a wrong turn, like I said, because that's all being talked about. That's all... you know, all worked out, that's all planned, and mm-hmm. everybody agrees to that plan, everybody pulls on the same rope.
Nice.
But sometimes the label took the wrong turn.
Okay.
You know, and decide and made the wrong decision. They basically every time made the wrong decision which song should be the first single. So we ended up being like, okay, we want this to be the first single. And now let's bring the A&R guy down and have him sing backing vocals on that song. And mysteriously, that became the first single.
And mysteriously, that worked out to their benefit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the thing is. And, of course, you know, you mentioned the word label. And,
right.
You know,
I say that loosely.
I know you do. And, you know, and it's kind of one of those things where, now, for me talking, you know, and again, all these people that you've gotten to work with, you worked with them when nobody knew who the hell they were. So it still counts, too. Independent.
Right. In the beginning, yeah.
In the beginning, independent, unsigned, and things like that, you know.
Right.
You know, you and I, you know, kind of both agreed in the fact that in the beginning, you don't need a label.
Nowadays. You know, I mean, back then it was pretty much impossible. A studio day was $2,500, and that was just a studio day.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to, you know, have hotels, you had to have this and that, and rental gear, and pay the engineer, pay the producer. And so you would never even get into the studio and get to spend this kind of money if you weren't good.
Exactly.
You know? And nowadays, the whole studio thing is a lot easier. There's a lot of studios based on home recording gear that, you know, can deliver a fairly decent product for a lot less money, you know.
Right.
The one thing missing is still the experience.
There it is. Well,
you know, you can have any plugin in the world. If you don't know where to put that microphone, it's still not. It's still just a fixed job rather than a mixed job.
See, and that's the I guess, and in that you kind of summed it up in the sense of the experience. You know, yes, you can get the recordings and stuff. Now, the labels and some of the bigger recording studios and companies and things, we're not going to work with somebody unless you were what you said it good.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and the stuff that you guys do, you care about the music.
We do.
You know, that's all you care about. If the music is good, you probably play it. But that was the way the labels were. They would care about the music of a band. And then at some point in the early 90s, it kind of flipped over, and you would call a label, and before you would be talking to a bass player or a drummer or a guitar player that knew what an A chord was, and now you're talking to a lawyer or an accountant.
And now
they were selling not the music, they were selling a product.
Nah.
And I think that's the point when stuff went down the drain.
You made this huge light bulb just go in my head, and that was such an enlightening moment, and you were so right. And we do, and our thing here at Radio Memphis, and I was telling you about, you know, Rick, you know, who created Pirate Radio Studios from Radio Memphis. You know, one of the things was that we had to make sure it was quality music, you know, and he's hard about making sure that it's studio quality, and that it's not something that was, you know, recorded in your mom's basement or in your garage, you know. Of course, we can go back and say, remember when you used to record stuff on jam boxes and, you know, and on your tape and stuff, and then try to, you know, sell that in as a demo? Yeah, we don't do that, you know. and as far as caring and concern, but yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, in that having people represent, you know, a label and have people represent those companies, are they need to be those musicians. They need to be those guys that were in on the front ends and understand what that means. And you just made it click in my head. You really did. You really did. And that makes complete sense. But in working with, you know, what people have to do now and what artists have to do now, I know that at some point, you know, this is the big, you know, do-it-yourself, you know, genre right now.
And well, it's not necessarily the do-it-yourself. Of course, you're right in a way, but it's more likely pay for it yourself.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
if you can afford Sir George Martin, then you will have a great record. But that's going to cost you a pretty penny. You know, but so in that case, it's like, okay, we're going to go to the guy down the street who does it for $50 a day, and you're going to end up with a product that's accordingly, you know. But it's still, you have to pay for itself. And record labels now expect you to bring in a finished production, a finished project. And in other words, you have to go somewhere and spend some money and make that really good. And, you know, that is the hardest part.
Well, it's not, you know, though, Michael, you know, it's not any different than, you know, in the early days, in the beginning, you know, when a record label pulled somebody in and they absorbed all those costs. But when it came down to you actually selling your music and putting your products out, you know, and things like that, I mean, those costs were recouped. So it's no different than you to go around and go, all right, I'm going to go pay for this. You know?
Well, except for where are you going to find the $100,000?
Well, all right, so yeah,
you know, and that was the thing that the label did before, and they would front you at least that money. They were like big banks, and they would get a very, very nice return from it. But still, at least you had the chance to make that music. And now it's like, okay, it's very, very expensive to do this. And where are you going to find that money, you know?
You're right.
And of course, there's some sponsors and that might help with that. And I'm getting a lot of that, you know.
Is getting a lot of that stuff, is trying to be sponsored, or, you know, people asking you to sponsor and that kind of thing?
No. I'm working with a lot of bands that are sponsored by somebody, like some big company or something like that, you know.
Okay.
On my end, it's like, look, I can't do it for $50 a day. I have a big studio. It cost me $2 million, and I have to you know, support that studio. And also, that's my life.
That's your
business. How I make my money. It's not like I do it after 7 o'clock in the evening. No, I do it all day.
Right.
And you know, so there has to be, some stuff has to be paid from that, and I can't go below a certain, otherwise, if I had all the money in the world, I would go, hey, let's just go and do a bunch of records, you know?
And you would do your thing, right.
I have to keep the lights on.
Absolutely, and that's kind of, you know, and I support that, and I totally agree with that. There's a thing about it, though, also, and too, in that do it yourself, yes, I mean, yes, pay for yourself, I totally get that, but everybody has got this thing where I can figure this out. I'll know what I, you know, I'll do it. I'll make the relationships, you know, I'll make it all happen on my own. And right. At some point though, there are people like you, you know, mm-hmm. that have some really, really cool advice, you know, and there's some, mm-hmm. there are some people that I still feel there's a part of me that the industry still has that one. It's like Star Wars. It's like Darth Vader, okay? Mm-hmm. Darth Vader had that one little piece that got saved at the very, very end. You know, mm-hmm. Luke got it out of his dad. You know, right. And I know that there's that one little piece that's still left in that when they see something cool and that they see something magical, I'm not saying that they're going to pay for everything, but there's one of those, they're going to invest in that sound. They're going to invest in that music, you know?
Right. And nowadays, it's, you know, there's different reasons why companies do that. Number one reason is, hey, they want a tax write-off.
Okay.
Basically, they give you a bunch of money, and they don't really care if that product gets sold or not. For them, it's a tax write-off. If it does get sold, which is a wonderful situation for the artist, then great, awesome. But you know, on the other hand, you know, a lot of big companies own football teams, and nowadays it's they own a band. You know,
and
it's,
right.
It's, come to that, but sustaining. I much rather have the band have the money to promote the stuff later, which is a real expensive thing.
Sure, it is.
It's much more expensive than just recording the stuff. And obviously, the prices are way down. I mean, the record in the '80s was like $500,000.
Wow.
Easily.
Wow.
So now it's maybe a tenth of that, you know, to do a great record.
And to do what you need to do with that.
Yes.
And
to make it right. You know, that's the other thing. It has to be made right. And sometimes today, I still take like 2 months to do a rock record with 10, 12 songs on it. It takes me 2 months. And people go, wow, I don't have that kind of time. I don't have that kind of vacation. I can't take off work. And, you know, and that's exactly what I mean.
There it is.
If you were in the 80s, there was no work to take off from. That was your work.
That's what you did.
Right.
That's what you spent time doing.
Yeah.
And that's what you invested in.
That's exactly right.
But that's how you were good. Then that's how you got good. And that's how
you kind of had to be, right?
You're going to have to be. And that's the other thing too, is that why am I going to want a rushed, banged up job?
Right.
You know, and right. I'm trying to convince everybody that this is the next best thing since sliced bread.
That's exactly right. I have a nice poster of Angus Young in my studio, and you know, when the band's in, yeah, but we're way better than the band down the street. I point to the poster, I go, there's your competition. Better than that, not the band down the street, you know.
There it is. And that's the way it's supposed to be. And,
yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, everybody has got this, they've got this thing where things have to be handed to them, you know. To a certain extent, and again, it sounds like, you know, I've been listening to us talk, you know, for the past, you know, better part of the past 30 minutes. I'm like, man, it sounds like we're bashing. We're not.
No, we're just like putting it as it is.
You know,
to say it again, there is no instant gratification. There is no you're not entitled to anything. You have to earn it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying it. Came from him. Sure did. That's exactly what needs to happen.
Right.
That's exactly what needs to happen. So you get to, just kind of not off the subject, but so you go, so you actually get to do these sound clinics. Now, a lot of people don't realize you've actually like created equipment. You've created stuff, you know.
Right.
You know.
And the thing is that, you know, with the whole instant gratification and with, affordable, cheap gear that you can do halfway decent records with. The the weight is not on the system anymore. It's not like knowing how sound works. It's not like where to put the microphone. It's like, okay, I just have this thing. That's what everybody uses. I use it that, so I have to be good. I use a preset that some famous guy has, and so it's going to sound like him. And, you know, I think that the education is a very, very important thing, and that's why I do those workshops where people come in from all over the world to learn the art of recording.
Nice.
And, you know, luckily, I you know, that's how Hannah and I met, pretty much. And it's something to pass on what I have learned over the last 40 years. You know, and there was no internet. When I started this, there was no way I could, like, sit back in the studio and watch somebody work. You know, they would all, like, sit on their little secrets. And
and they wouldn't share with you, and you just have to figure it out on your own and you know, and make it work.
Right. And the chance to sit in the studio just in the back, not even be seen, not even be heard, and just watch what was going on would have been amazing. And now that's what we're doing now. And sometimes, you know, We did it with King's X, and there's a bunch of people there that came just to see their favorite band record.
Same.
You know, and with Hannah, it was just like, okay, she's just great. And people stand there with their jaws dropping when she goes in there and sings her songs.
Same.
And you know, that's exactly what we need, because those people will stand in the first row when she performs with their jaws dropping, listening to her.
That's,
you know,
amazing.
That's where it's got to go.
You just gave me chill bumps, man. That's amazing. that's awesome. That's fantastic. Now, out of okay. Well, I know that right now Hannah's one of your favorites, because, you know, we keep talking about her. We love her. Yeah. We love playing her here at Radio Memphis too. But you have to say, over the course of time, all the incredible people that you've worked with and stuff, there's got to be a couple of favorite moments.
There's let's put it that way. There's memories, and luckily for me, I would think 99% of those memories are really good. And now you're going to ask about the other 1%, right?
Of course. You're the one that brought it up. I didn't have to say it.
That wasn't that good. Is also stuff that never got released, and I'm actually very thankful for that. But, you know, the first Skid Row album, the whole project of that always sticks out to me as being very, very rememberable. It was really, really cool. And working with Ozzy, working with Alice, you know, Metallica, and those people, it's just a pleasure.
Wow.
You know, and people like Extreme and White Lion, they're just like great, great musicians. Kane Roberts, you know, wonderful people and great musicians, and it's a joy to work with them in the studio. And of course, there's a million moments that you go, oh yeah, that was funny, you know. But if you ask me about one now, I would go,
you could. There's no way you could put it all into one.
No,
you couldn't do that. I mean,
absolutely not. And the whole, like I said, for instance, the first Skid Row album, being out there in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and doing this record, being pretty much isolated from the world and doing this, was such a great experience. You know, and I think you can hear that on the album too.
See, that's insane. And like I said, you yourself, you know, you're one of those. You're like a walking history book of moments that were not captured in film, were not captured, you know, on paper, or even in an actual finished song. You know, but
right.
you yourself, if somebody could plug into your head for 2 seconds, you've got all these cool things that have happened. And, you know, for me, you know, just listening to you talk, you know, you, all these people that you've worked with and all these incredible, you know, artists, that's what they did. That's mm-hmm. who they were. That's what that's what their life was. That's mm-hmm. It wasn't like, okay, on the weekends, I'm going to be a rock star. And
right.
You know, this is what they are.
Yeah, and most of them, it's like, you know, when you work with people, they don't say, I want to sound like Van Halen, or I want to sound like Ozzy Osbourne. Most of the time, it's like, you know, I want to sound like myself. This is me. And those are the successful people.
Nice. That is the way it should be.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
I don't think there's any excuse in the world for people in general to not deserve happiness. I don't see where it becomes a point where if you don't agree with someone's particular point of view, your mission in life should not be to go out there and make sure that they're just as miserable as you are. Is all of a sudden your bills getting paid by this person because you now have the right to completely do this? I mean, are the people that are going through these changes in their lives, does it affect you in any way, shape, or form? Does it really matter?
Well, I don't want them using the same bathroom as me.
That's all you got to bitch about? When the TLC channel decides to stop putting cameras on the dumbest people that they can find and make us think that is entertainment, maybe this world might be a little bit better of a place.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. You can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Player.fm, TuneIn, and Stitcher. You can also listen online and download past episodes at radio-memphis.com.
I know that you're a busy man. And I could sit here, man. I could talk to you till tomorrow. And I would. I would. I want you to know how much I appreciate you, and
sure.
and how much that you have meant, you know, what you've meant to me to be here on Radio Memphis and talk with me on Around the World. We've got, you know, a ton of people that are tuned in and stuff, and it's one, you know, it's one thing to read about you, and it's one thing to read about the stories and all the people you worked with, but when we get to talk, you know, it's like, wow, you're
yeah.
right, you know, it kind of hits home. Yeah. You know, and the fact that you are in you're in my backyard, you know, because we're in Memphis. Mm-hmm. I already told you that at some point when I make it up to Nashville that
have to come by.
I'm coming. I am busting in. I am busting in, man. And I've already got, you know, I've already decided. You know, there's a great possibility, and I haven't solidified it yet. But I may be making an appearance at Summer NAMM. I don't know.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, and so with that being said, there that might be during that time period. But it's one of those things where I gotta come see. I gotta come see. I wanna come to the whole amusement park of Wire World. I wanna see what you're doing, and I wanna see what
breathe
you got.
The air.
Absolutely. I know, and see that's how people feel about the Memphis and Mid-South music. They figure that if they come and eat the dirt that they'll get some.
Right.
You know, that's how I feel about you, man. I figure if I breathe the air and if I touch the knob, then I'm going to be that person. But yeah. I know that you're are you working on anything cool? Are you working with any artists right
now?
Yeah,
I was just I had a little bit of a trip through Europe. Went to the Frankfurt Music Messe and I try to go there whenever I can. And from there I went to Spain.
Oh, nice.
And worked with a band called Fire with a Y.
Okay.
And that was just an amazing experience. That girl was just, you know, I want her and Hannah to do a duet somehow.
Oh, now you're making things happen.
Yeah, and that was really cool. You know, we went to Mallorca, the island of Spain, and recorded in tiny little studios, but it still came out great. And well, I can ask them, you know, if they would mind for you to play it. I'm sure you would like it.
You know what? That would be fantastic. I would be more than happy. Anything you've got recording, you know, we play for promotion only. But even you and I discussed this the other day, in that, you know, the promotion and stuff of being in 140 countries and us being able to have somebody hear it, you know, mm-hmm. is priceless. If you've got some artists and stuff that you'd like to have played and highlighted, you know for a fact that we will do it here at Radio Memphis.
Cool.
Absolutely.
Well, cool, yeah.
Absolutely.
But I'll ask him, after Spain, I went to France, and I did a workshop there. And again, I did a workshop with a live band, and that was the band Dirty Greed from Toulouse, France. And I've just got done today mixing that song.
Oh, wow.
So, you know.
You're working all the time.
Oh, all the time. No, I'm making music all the time. You're not working.
That's right, because you love what you do.
Yeah.
That's right, you love what you do. But, you know, we talked about this, though. You have got to find time to plant your ass in the sand for 2 seconds and drink that margarita.
That's exactly right.
Coming up. Because you know what? A song idea will come up out of that just by doing that alone.
Exactly, yeah.
Good deal. Well, sweetheart, I know that you've got some work that you're working on. Thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with me here on Radio Memphis. Anything I can do, please let me know. And of course, I've got your number. You realize that we're now friends, so I'm going to hit you up. I'm going to hit you up from time to time and see what's going on in your world.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you again for hanging out with us.
We appreciate thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon, Michael.
Okay.
All righty. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Oh, my God. What an amazing man. Yeah, you know what? So, I talked for the hour. I sure did, because that right there is a complete legend. And he is so down home and so down to earth. And you heard it here first on Radio Memphis. That's right. I'm so excited. And again, you heard that, of course, he's out of Nashville. Of course, he's all over the planet when it comes to working with musicians and things like that. And the opportunities, you never know. That was the other point. You never know who may walk in on you and who may actually make things happen and want to work with you. But the lesson out of that entire conversation that really hit home for me, and it even made it immediate, it made it personal for me too, even what I do, is that, look, this is your life. This is your lifestyle. This is what you do. You know, if you ain't 100% into it, then this ain't for you. So what I need to do now, he just also got done actually finishing an EP with Miss Hannah Fairlight. And they're supposed to be releasing it, I believe, at the beginning of June. And I'm going to probably be getting with her to see if I can't get some tracks in. And in the meantime, let me at least play another track that she actually recorded at Wire World Studios with Mr. Michael Wagner. This is Don't Wait Up. You've been listening to Radio Memphis Around the World at radio-memphis.com.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios, Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more audio on demand, go to radio-memphis.com.